Two.
Hello and welcome, everybody,
To the Pick Six podcast. Here we are 1 week after Nebraska's 44-22 loss to Utah. Sam McCune, along with Evan Bland, the Silver Tongue, has been doing a gold medal job. I was going to say silver medal job, but you've been doing a gold medal job on the transfer portal since we got back from Las Vegas. We've already recapped the game, so to speak, so we're not going to do any of that here today. We're going to dive right into the transfer portal pool. Evan, it has been a busy 5 days for you, great work. You've been kicking ass and taking names on this stuff. What has been the moment that's been the most portal moment since this thing opened on Friday?
Well, I think the one thing about the portal, Sam, and maybe some of this is my tendency, but I like kind of putting a bow on the day if you can. Like, there's so much going on, and you want to reach a point where, like, okay, if you haven't been glued to to social media all day, what does it look like? And it feels like there have been at least 3 days where all that's been thrown out the window in the evening. Obviously, the Kenny Minchie flip was right around 8 p.m. Kind
Eight.
of when you thought things were going to be set the way that they were. And then on Tuesday night, you had multiple commitments like within a minute of each other, with Anthony Calandria coming at the quarterback from UNLV, and then Dwayne McDougal from San Diego State. Those guys commit concurrently, essentially. So that was interesting. And it just, there's always something, man. It kind of reminds me of just like a sitting on the beach, and there's a wave of news, and then it recedes for a moment, and then there's another wave of news, and it's not always a commit. It might be a departure or a target that's gone somewhere else, but there's just it's such a flurry. You think back to like the old school signing days in early February, and this kind of feel that kind of feels quaint now compared to what's going on now. This is that on steroids, extended over like 2 weeks. So yeah, Nebraska's been fast and furious. I thought the Tuesday flurry kind of eased some nerves in the fan base, right? Like, they lost Minchie on Monday, and it was just like, well, what's Nebraska doing? And they had a pretty good day on Tuesday. So it's not done. Obviously, there's plenty still to go, but it does feel like that first few days, the first week especially, is really frenetic. And I think people enjoy following it like they did recruiting. Maybe not, maybe people are sick of it, but I get the sense that there's sort of an exhilaration that comes with the roller coaster ride of the portal.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Let's just start there. So we knew probably right around the time of the end of the bowl game that Nebraska's priority was going to be Kenny Minchie. He's a backup from Notre Dame who lost the job to CJ Carr. The best thing he's known for is losing a job to somebody else and how close he came to winning it. He commits to Nebraska on a Sunday, says it on ESPN, and the plan that Nebraska had envisioned was, okay, we're going to pay Kenny Minchie decent money, but not crazy money. He's going to come in. He's going to compete with TJ Lateef, but let the best man win. Lateef's going to stay. They're going to make each other better. Minchie's a little bit better of a thrower, I think, than Lateef. He's a little bit different kind of runner than Lateef, but a little bit. He's mobile, but he's polished, and he's a high level kid. And all the things that I've heard is absolutely true. All those things are true. Nevertheless, he had played very little college football. I mean, he had not played a lot in football games. He had done a lot, I'm sure, in practice and behind the scenes, but he has played less football than TJ Lateef has played in college football. Kentucky comes along on what day would it have been? Would have been Sunday night, Monday morning. So they were trying out Sam Levitt, and not trying him out, but they were, kicking the tires on him. Well, Levitt is a very talented player, but I think he just doesn't really know exactly what he wants to do. There's a picture out there of him sitting with
On his
Lane Kiffin
phone.
and looking at his phone.
Yeah.
I think it's just a beautiful distillation of what I think that the story on that guy is. Remember, Nebraska kicked the tires on Levitt a couple years ago, and I think kind of came away with, yeah, I don't think he really wants to be here. And so Levitt is out there again. He's moving on, looking at somewhere else. He was at Kentucky, kicked the tires there. Went to LSU, LSU needs a quarterback because Brandon Sorensen picked Texas Tech, which has gobs of money over LSU. And hello, Lane Kiffin, you have less money than Texas Tech does. So Levitt's there. Now I don't know that Levitt's going to LSU because Damon Williams is decommitted, or he's like stepped out of his agreement with Washington and might go to LSU. So I don't know where Levitt's going. But those dominoes tipped in a way that it left Kentucky get needing a quarterback who they knew was going to start. And Kenny Minchie's been given the opportunity to basically start there for 2 seasons for what I believe will be a bad Kentucky team next year. I mean, they're rebuilding. They're not going to be good, but he will play and he will get a lot of money to do so. So he will get a lot of money to play for a 4-8, 5-7 team. Their schedule's probably harder than Nebraska's. It's a bear. It's a total bear. 9 SEC games plus Louisville. It's a bear. So then Nebraska's back in the market. And I think it put a little egg on Nebraska's face for sure, because the vision that they had wasn't going to come to fruition. And then very quickly, we heard the name Aiden Childs, Anthony Calandria, Bo Perbua, and then DJ Lagway, which I'm not exactly sure how that all got connected. DJ Lagway is not coming here. And that was an afterthought for Nebraska. And they went with Calandria. I think they could have had any of the three. Aiden Childs ends up at Northwestern. God bless Northwestern and Chip Kelly and all the rest. But I don't think Northwestern is offering Aiden Childs something that Nebraska could not. So Nebraska had his pick of the trio, and it picked the one that it wanted. And I like him more than Kenny Minchie by some margin. I don't know that I understand the Kenny Minchie plan, but that's what I would have probably referred to it as. It's like it was like a plan, but it wasn't like a player that you know what he can do because you've seen it on film. With Anthony Calandria, there is hours and hours and hours and hours of film, both at Virginia and at UNLV. And what the film has, I like. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, Minshew was potential. Like you said, there's not a lot of track record out there on film. Calandria has been productive and he's been a winner. I think that's the other part of it. I mean, UNLV, it wasn't like they had a great defense last year, and he helped them win some shootouts, and he's fun to watch, man. Like you watch him hurdle defenders and roll out and either gun the ball downfield or pull it down and make a man miss. Just his style of play is very exciting. Certainly, you know, what we saw with 2 years with Dylan Raiola, more of a polished pocket passer type. You know, Calandria is the opposite of that. He's going to take some risks. It does, you know, the thing you look at, of course, is the turnovers. And he had quite a few of those at Virginia. And I guess he cut down a little bit at UNLV, but we've talked about it on this podcast before about sometimes that's the risk that comes with a mobile quarterback. You're gonna have some injuries or turnovers, and so he's gone through some of that. I think he's gonna bring a kind of a spark to the offense, and I think to the program overall. Like you watch some of his interviews that he's done, like he can be pretty charismatic when he wants to be. I think, you know, he was popular with the teams he was at. We've talked about that with TJ Lateef as being a guy that was really popular among his teammates. I think Calandria is that type of guy who has that intangible that you want to have in a quarterback too. And, you know, I kind of look at the long-term plan too a little bit. And I guess what does that even look like in the portal era? But you can see a vision where Calandria is the guy this year, and then that sets up a situation in 27 where you bring in Trey Taylor and he competes with Lateef and you see what that thing looks like. So I think if you're Nebraska, you definitely got to feel better about 26 and having a proven guy in there. And you know, I think Calandria gives that offense the kind of versatility and improvisational ability that maybe they just haven't had in a few years.
I like all of that. I think that's absolutely true. He can reset things outside the pocket. His interception rate this season, just this season, was lower than Dylan Raiola's interception rate this season. So Raiola was 2.4%, and Calandria this season was 2.1%. Now you go back to the season before that at Virginia, and it was 3.4%. So it was higher. That was as his true sophomore year, I suppose you would say it. And then you go back to his freshman season or whatever you want to call that, and it was, I'm looking it up right now, 3.7. So yeah, turnovers have been a little bit of an issue for him. There have been some fumbles, a couple of fumbles in there too. But he gives you a guy that can come in and run pretty much the entire offense. He can make plays off script. He can get you things in the red zone that, quite frankly, Dylan Royal has struggled to get you because Dylan didn't get out of the pocket much. And for whatever reason, Latif was not in the red zone a lot. They scored from outside the red zone multiple times when TJ Latif was the quarterback, whether it was Mekhi Nelson on that long run or a couple of touchdowns against UCLA, they just weren't in the red zone. So we don't have necessarily a ton of data on what Latif's going to do in the red zone, other than hand the ball off to Emmett Johnson from the half yard line, that kind of stuff. So we don't know exactly what he is, but we have, again, gobs and gobs of tape on Calandria and what he can and can't do outside the pocket. And look, I mean, if you're starting with comps and you want to go the highest possible end comp, you would say Bo Nix. That's not who he is. Nix is a better quarterback. But you would then go Devin Dampier. Devin Dampier is 5'11 and 210. Calandria is 6', 205. Similar players. I'd say Calandria might even be a little bit better of a runner outside the pocket. I don't know that he's better inside the pocket than Dampier, but I'd say he's a little bit, a little bit more interesting and dynamic outside the pocket. I'd compare him favorably to Tanner Mordecai, who was at Wisconsin a couple of years ago and quite frankly beat Nebraska back in 23. And he was probably the reason that Nebraska lost the game. He made some plays with his feet in that game and made some plays. I like the picture. He's got to stay healthy. But if he gets banged up and TJ Latif is the guy that comes in, I like that picture too. Like everybody's going to say, okay, TJ's in the huddle. It's not going to be a panic. It's not going to be Chuba Purdy's coming into the huddle, and we have no idea what's going to happen. No offense to Chuba, but I think there's good pictures there. And quite frankly, again, if they had just went and got Calandria on Sunday night, and he was the guy, I think the Husker fan base would have felt better about getting him than they felt about Kenny Minchie. One, two, you wouldn't have had all this drama with Minchie leaving and then Calandria coming. I think Nebraska ended up ahead, provided Latif returns. He has indicated to Nebraska he's going to return, but I don't know that anything was signed, sealed, and delivered. That said, where's TJ going to start? What school is he going to where they're at a power conference school where they're like, yeah, based on your four-game resume, we're giving you the job. It's just yours. Take it. I don't know what school that'd be. Do you? I don't.
No, I'm with you. I mean,
Like,
no.
what was the lowest performing power conference school last year? I think it was probably Purdue, right? Or Maryland or
Oh,
Michigan State.
they like their quarterback in Maryland.
Yes, they do. And I don't know who Michigan State's going with now that Childs is gone. Probably the guy behind him. The guy behind him actually, I think, did a little bit better job. And I think Childs would have been a risk. I'll just be candid. I think Aiden Childs is probably a better athlete than almost anybody in the portal. It's not a question of his athleticism. He makes a lot of mistakes. He just makes bad passes, and he is a turnover machine.
Some Jeff Sims comp there, yeah.
Sure. I think he's an even better athlete than Sims. I think Aiden Childs has got a lot of ability. I just think it's going to require a lot from Chip Kelly to get it. And Chip may just say, you know what, buddy? You're running the ball 14 times a game. And we're turning you into, Jeremiah Masoli from my 08 Oregon days. Like, we're going to win games because you're going to be a single wing and you're going to run it and we're going to run the ball for, you're going to run it for 1,000. You'll throw it for 1,800, 2,000, and we'll win some games doing that. I would be surprised if he threw for 3,000 yards with that offense. And so I think there's some risk there, for sure. By the way, Northwestern has really glowed up its coaching staff. I mean, Chip Kelly's a hell of an offensive mind. I know it didn't go well with the Raiders, but I mean, Pete Carroll was fired. That's a hell of a hire for David Braun. That's a great hire. And they're going to be a formidable team that Nebraska's not going to play. Northwestern's not on the schedule next year, but I'll be really curious to see what Chip Kelly does with Aiden Childs. Anyway, I think they got the best of the three. And I got no beef there. I think Calandria is going to be the best of the three. And I almost thought that the Minshew plan was almost a little too deferential to, we got to make sure TJ stays. I mean, he's going to stay or he's not going to stay. But, Lateef did what he did. He was pretty good. But you can't give him the starting job. He's going to have to go win it. If he beats out Calandria, then he had a hell of a spring. Because I think it's going to be hard for him to do that.
No doubt. I mean, Klander is going to be a 4-year starter, potentially. I mean, most likely. That's what I think Nebraska brought him in to do. And,
I think they did.
if the Riola plan had continued as scheduled, I mean, Lateef wouldn't have been in the mix until 27 anyway. He would have had a redshirt year and then another year to develop. So it's hard to judge him too harshly on what he could be in a couple of years. But I'm with you. Like, I don't see that there's obvious opportunity for him to go elsewhere, either to make a bunch of money or to play more than he would at Nebraska. And I think, guys who are self-aware in a situation like this would also say, hey, if Calandria is starting, like, what are the odds that he's healthy all season in the Big Ten playing the way that he does? Like, you're probably going to have some moments where Lateef might be called upon to come in. So I'm with you. I thought Calandria was the best option. He's fun to watch. That offense needed a little something more. And I think he makes up for, like, we've talked about how the best situation for Raiola was if you had Ohio State's skilled players around him and that kind of protection. Calandria makes up for a lot of deficiencies that may or may not pop up in that offense. He can create on his own. In basketball parlance, he can create his own shot. Like, that's something I think that Nebraska is going to need at times. Like, you're not going to have that overwhelming skill to execute your offense on schedule all the time. So I think that's something, as long as he can stay healthy and keep the giveaways within a reasonable range, like, it could be a major upgrade for the offense.
Do you think Nebraska will add another quarterback? Do you think they should?
Yeah, I do. I don't see how you can go into a season with just two scholarship guys. And that's not to say that they're all guys who can be starter quality, because I think those days generally have passed. Like, we've seen it year after year. Like, it's really hard to keep your quarterback room intact for even multiple seasons in a row. So I think you go out and you find somebody kind of in the Marcos Davila vein from last year, maybe a guy who is a redshirt freshman, young guy, hasn't had his chance yet. Maybe you can sell him on, if not money, then some of the other stuff that Nebraska has, facilities or your quarterback coach or things. But yeah, I think, because who's your third guy right now is what, Bodie Soka, walk on. Like, I think you got to have another option. And again, it's not going to be someone you're probably going to spend a lot of money on, but you can sell them on playing in the Big Ten and developing and maybe having your chance down the line. So I think so, don't you?
What about Zane Flores or Danny Kalen?
Mean, they're local guys. Do you think, I'm not sure either one is pining to come back at this point. Maybe they are. I
Well,
guess you
Kalen
could.
was here.
He
Flores
was.
was never here. He was in
Yeah, Kalen would want to
Nebraska.
come back. I
He's
don't
from
get
Brent.
that sense.
I don't know. I can tell you this. I mean, I don't know where, unless Flores played at Oklahoma State, and he has enough tape that maybe he can go and, I don't know, compete for a starting job at the power conference level. And he's got a lot of potential, but he's been banged up. Kalen, I think if Kalen wants to start, he's going to have to go down to the group of five for a
And he
little.
left Nebraska so he could start. He left Nebraska
Yeah, but
because
he
that
wasn't going to
opportunity
start at
was there.
Virginia because the guy that he went out there to back up wasn't going to. That guy's better than Dylan. I mean, Chandler Morris is a good player. And that's the guy that, forced Calandria to transfer. So, Chandler Morris, if he were available, that'd be sweet. That's Chad Morris's son, who's going to, I think, be the new Clemson. I don't see. Is Chandler Morris available to go to Clemson? Because that's kind of what I, anyway. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not all the way up on the Virginia quarterback information, but Kalen wasn't going to start up there right away. Now, apparently he's, didn't feel like he was going to get an opportunity to start any at any point, so he's moved on. But I would take one of those guys back if, well, Flores has never been here, so he doesn't count. Like, he could just come to Nebraska and battle. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if he's healthy. He's awfully accurate. He's an awfully good player. I don't know what I mean. It was a tough situation at Oklahoma State, and they went and got their quarterback from North Texas, so they got a starter.
I wonder if Nebraska could do it differently if it would have had a 26 quarterback signing. I know Dayton Raiola was that guy, and that decommit happened late in the process. But to me, that's kind of the ideal third guy. You bring in a freshman that you feel good about, you develop him. He's an emergency kind of guy early on in his career, but they didn't do that. So yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately, maybe
Why
not.
not just keep Marcos Davila if what you're looking for is Marcos Davila?
Well, I don't know that they're looking for him specifically, but that kind of situation,
Yeah. They could
right?
have just kept him, though. They could have just said, hey, we'll pay you to stay instead of you going to, like, I don't know, Texas State, or it wouldn't even be Tech, like, FCS,
Hey,
whatever,
maybe he
San
wanted to
Jose.
play. I don't know. There's a lot of
Yeah,
factors that
maybe.
go into that.
That's, I mean, that's definitely possible. I don't know. I think they want it. I think it would be ideal if they got a guy that was like maybe a cut above where I think Davila was at, which is Davila was like fourth string. So he wasn't, when he came here, I was like, well, maybe he'll be the second stringer. And it may became pretty clear pretty quickly he was not going to be the second string quarterback, that it was going to be Latif. And to be clear, I like Latif's game a lot. All right, let's move on to the rest of some of the other additions. First, let's start with the linebacker position, where they've added three: Owen Chambliss, Dexter Foster, Will Hawthorne. Thoughts there as to why and what you think of the guys?
I mean, it's a range. They certainly reset the position. They needed to reset the position. I mean, you've written about it, some good stuff. This was a three-man rotation. They'd like a little bit more depth there. Plus, you're losing Marquess Watson-Trent. So,
And David Wright.
Owen Chambliss is kind of, he's on the proven end of the spectrum, not at the power conference level, but you can't argue with the production that he had at San Diego State. I thought the solo tackles especially were really impressive. I mean, that is indicative of a guy that
They are.
has a nose for the ball and is physical enough to finish off those stops. So that's, Nebraska, I don't think maybe to this point has had they haven't benefited as much from the new coaches through the portal as I would have thought. And maybe that'll change in the next little bit, but Shambles is certainly an example of that. He comes in and will clearly be in the mix. Foster, a little bit of a younger guy, but I oozes upside, oozes potential. It'll be
Oh yeah,
fascinating to see
I
what he
like
can
him. They're the
do.
same. They're the same class. Foster and Chambliss are both going to be juniors, I believe.
Shambles, oh, yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah, Shambles has 2 years to go. Yeah, we're kind of learning about these guys on the fly here. That's
Well,
right.
Chambliss
So,
is 2 years older than Foster, I believe, because Foster's played right away since he got to Oregon State. But
Foster's had what, like injuries, or he hasn't been 100% the whole time. So his upside to me is more intriguing.
oh
The
yeah.
production from Chambliss, I think, is also interesting. And then Hawthorne, it more or less is a high school addition. Like, we've seen examples of this in recent years where Nebraska circles back with guys the second time around. Tommy Hill was an example of that a few years ago. And so Hawthorne kind of comes in as a benefit of circumstance to Nebraska, where Matt Campbell goes to Penn State and he's looking for a new home. But I like him long term. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Christian Jones, just in terms of like what he could be down the road. And
They love him.
smart defender, processes the game quickly, for at least he did in high school. I don't know that he had the chance to show what he could do much at Iowa State, but I like it. Like, you have two guys in Shambles and Foster who should be immediately in the mix. Hawthorne's going to have his chance as part of that next wave with Dawson Merritt and Christian Jones and Jacob Bauer and some of those guys. So I thought that was a position of weakness, probably more so as the season went on, certainly down the stretch. And credit Nebraska for resetting it with some guys. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I think they did a great job adding depth and guys that can make a difference at that second level.
Offensive line, they add Brendan Black, who's going to be who is good. 3 year starter at Iowa State, which has been a better program than Nebraska, didn't want to go to Penn State. We'll have to ask him why. because obviously a lot of those guys are just going to Penn State. I don't know that that's necessarily going to work as neatly and seamlessly as the thing at Indiana did with all the JMU guys, but we'll find out. Anyway, Brandon Black's here, and then Tree Babalade, is that how you say
A
his
lot
name?
of it, yeah.
I really like him. I know he's been banged up and hot and cold a little bit, but I like his game a lot, and he will not be shoved back into the lap of the quarterback. He's 6'3", 6'4", 335, grown man, won't get shoved back into the lap of the quarterback. And that happened in multiple games last year where guys just got shoved. You can get beat, but guys were getting shoved by bull rushes by Michigan and Northwestern. It wasn't good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, so you essentially find two starters. Brandon Black, you would think, would play right guard. That's where he's played his whole career at Iowa State. Babalade, right tackle, though he's played some left tackle. So you can see a vision where you got Pritchett on the left end, Babalade on the right end, Justin Evans at center. You still need some resolution on what that left guard spot would look like, vacated by Henry Lutofsky. Maybe that's an internal deal or where they feel like they have somebody, or maybe you go out and still find one more interior blocker. So yeah, you like how that position's coming together there. Yeah, still maybe the depth could be an issue. You got Gunnar Gatula coming back, of course, from injury next year. And so you could move some pieces around and try to figure that thing out. But they found two starters, two clear starters, guys who've done it before. And it's worked for them in recent years. Ben Scott, Rocco Spindler, kind of feels like that sort of thing again, where you have a stopgap, and hopefully, for their sake, Jeep Wade can be a guy who now starts building that depth internally and developing it, so you don't have to go out and pay top dollar for some of these guys in every portal cycle like they're doing right now.
I could see them adding a third offensive lineman. I could see them adding three defensive linemen. The one that they seem to be trending for is Anthony Jones, right? Yeah. UCLA last year, we watched him out in the Rose Bowl. I think the year before that, he was at Indiana. I don't know.
Michigan State,
Michigan
maybe.
State, then Indiana, then Oregon. So he's well traveled within the league. I think they'll probably add multiple defensive linemen. I know that they would have loved to get Trey White, the edge rusher from San Diego State, but he's going to Money U at Texas Tech. And then the other edge rusher is going to Texas A&M, Ryan Henderson. And A&M's defense isn't very good, so they need help all over, and they're probably willing to pay for it. I know they made the playoff, but if you look at their schedule and you look at, I don't know, their defense wasn't very good. And so they needed help. I'm sure they would have loved to have gotten Trey White. I don't really know, have any intel on Ryan Henderson. They got McDougal, the safety, who's a good player. And then Chambliss, who I like, he can really run. So he can catch guys from behind. And when he gets going, it's a freight train. I'll be curious to see how just playing in the trenches in the Big Ten and how he works through all of that. In the Mountain West, you are playing some power teams. You're playing Boise will do that stuff. New Mexico will do it, a few others. But you're also playing some teams that spread it out. And he was very good against the teams that spread it out. Even though they got beat badly by Hawaii, he was very good in that game. He was good in some other games too. So you've got some triple option in the Mountain West, and you got some spread game in the Mountain West. I think he'll be good, certainly against the spread teams, and I'll be curious to see how it goes. I like Dexter Foster a lot. I don't know that we're leaving anybody out. I think that's everybody that
You touch on McDougal, Dwayne McDougal.
Yeah, so he's the safety from San Diego State, a good player. Obviously, they want to try to revamp the middle of their defense, right? So you're going to get some defensive tackles who are butt kickers, middle linebackers who can make plays, and then safeties up the middle. Not that their safeties right now are bad. I think Rex Guthrie and Caleb Benning have a great future at Nebraska, but you need depth there. And they just lost to Sean Singleton, Marquise Buford, and Malcolm Hartsock. So those were, and then prior to that, they had Isaac Gifford. So like they've lost a lot of institutional knowledge. at safety over the last two seasons. And now you've got to rebuild it. And you're rebuilding it with Guthrie and with Justin Rhett and with Caleb Benning. And I think you need to add somebody to the room that knows the defense that you're going to install. It's probably the best way to put it.
Hey, what's your so at this moment, Nebraska's got seven portal ads. They're trending for Anthony Jones, like you mentioned. Kwazi Gilmer is another really interesting receiver from UCLA that it looks like they're potentially closing in on. What's your shopping list at this point? If you were to, name your top two or three priorities that Nebraska maybe still needs to add in your eyes during this window.
I think from their perspective, a couple more defensive linemen, maybe one more offensive lineman. I don't know that they're in the market for a corner now that Larry Tarver's come back out of the portal and Braylon Prude's come back out of the portal. Prude's kind of a linebacker, kind of a safety. I guess we'll see where he lands. I don't think they're in the market for a tight end. I don't think at this time they're in market for a running back, irrespective of what I think. I think they like what they've got in the room. So long as Quentin Ives stays, he's your power back. He's your short yardage guy. And then you keep everybody healthy going into the next cycle, which means you got to keep Quentin Ives healthy, right? And we never got to see him fully healthy until maybe the bowl game. So, I think that was crucial. So my shopping list is probably two defensive linemen, an offensive tackle, apparently a receiver. Again, I figured they'd go get a receiver because there's always a receiver. That's four, on top of the eight that Jones would make. So that gets you to 12. I think probably the high end is 14. And then I'd go get another quarterback, preferably one of the two names that I mentioned. I'd go get somebody that knows something about this place or knows something about the Midwest. That'd be me.
So the running backs, I mean, I agree with you for the most part. The running back thing is interesting. Like we did this a year ago, watch Nebraska. They pursued Marty Brown late in the process, and Matt Rhule has said before, like they just kind of got outbid by Miami at that time, and he went there.
Well, he didn't say it, but that's what happened.
I mean, it's more or less, yeah. And it was that. So that position, like it intrigues me because Mekhi Nelson looked good for a quarter in the Las Vegas Bowl, and they like him a lot. But like, if you don't go after somebody, you're saying you're good moving forward with that group. You feel like Isaiah Mosey is going to take that next step. I wonder if it wouldn't hurt to bring in a guy with a little experience. Kind of like the safety discussion we're having. Like just because you bring in an older guy doesn't mean that you say that the younger guys aren't any good. Like Mekhi Nelson's barely played in college. Isaiah Mosey's new to the position. Quentin Ives hadn't played for 2 months until Las Vegas. So like in my opinion, they maybe should go after somebody, and maybe they're targeting somebody who hasn't yet entered the portal. I think that's the other interesting thing, Sam, is like you're seeing, especially in this 2 week window when this is it, you're seeing like these waves of guys. And we've gotten through the first wave where most of their visitors and top targets are starting to make the decisions. And now you're seeing the second wave of either guys who are sort of fallback options or guys who are actually entering the portal in the last day or two, not when it opened, with the idea that maybe they would have more leverage because that initial pool was exhausted a little bit. So I think that's the other fascinating thing is who might be late to the game in terms of being a portal entry that maybe Nebraska could pursue down the stretch. One of the fun things we'll see here in the next week.
I think that's great analysis, Evan. I think if you want to bring in a back who's a bell cow, that's going to cost you a little bit of money. And then the other option is you could bring in a power back. You bring in a power back, the guy that you already have is going to go. So you're not, if you want to bring in a lead back, that's going to cost you money. If you want to bring in a power back who replaces Ives, that A will cost you money, and B, he's not going to stay. Now, Marty Brown would be an option, but they're in the playoff. So, he's playing in the playoff. He scored the game-clinching touchdown against Ohio State. So, if that's the way they want to go, then they'll have to wait for him to be eliminated And I don't know that they're getting eliminated until like January 19th. So,
May well be.
yeah, I don't know exactly what's going to happen there. It's a screwed up situation to go into the portal. You know, like, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, it's just silly. If I were Marty Brown and Miami was willing to pay me what it paid the last time, I'd go back. That'd be me based on the success that they've had. But, you know, the challenge that you have here is that whoever you, if you pay someone to come in who's a bell cow, and I don't think that that's Marty Brown, then you're going to have to pay, you know, other people will have to leave. So there's a domino effect that kicks in there. And I'm just saying that I think they feel good about where Mekhi Nelson is, and they feel good about what Isaiah Mosey can do as a receiver slash back. And then if Ives is willing to stay as the power back, why replace him? Like, he's already there and he's good to go. So stick with him. And all three of them know Dana Holgorsen's offense. Anybody you bring in doesn't. I'm not trying to say that that's the way it should be, but that's probably the way that it is. Maybe there is somebody out there we don't know about. That's entirely possible. A lot of that hinges on Mekhi Nelson being exactly the football player that they think he is. And a lot of that also banks on EJ Barthel just turned Emmett Johnson into an NFL draft pick. And Emmett did that himself. Of course, Emmett has a lot to do with Emmett's own success, probably 90%. But if Dana Holgorsen's saying to Mekhi Nelson, you see what I just did with Emmett? I'm going to do that with you. And EJ Barthel now has that sort of, whatever you want to call it, cachet of developing an NFL back, then, and he's telling you, you don't need to spend any money on my position. Just reinvest in the guys we already have. And I will run the lowest maintenance, least fussy room in the program because everybody's coming back, everybody's here, and everybody's happy. That sounds like a plan to me. Now, I'm not saying that. Again, if there's a back out that you thought could change things, okay. I was pursuing South Dakota's running back. So maybe Iowa knows what it's doing. It's hard for me to say. But that I think is the approach, the thought process. If it were me, I'd go out and get a tight end. But those guys are few and far between. There's not that many of them. And, you know, Nebraska, I think, is really banking on health from some of its young guys. So they need to get Mac Markaway back and he needs to be healthy. Carter Nelson's getting surgery, I believe, again. So hard to know what he's going to be. Maybe he takes a redshirt year. Lindenmeyer's there. Sorensen is new. Can Ingwersen take a jump?
Yeah.
You know, can Ekternock be more than a blocker? They apparently feel good about that position. If it were me, I'd stock up on more tight ends, but that's not the way they want to play it. And then I would get a third quarterback. I would. I'd go get a guy that gives you quality depth. So I'd end up at like 13 or 14. That's probably where I'd be. You?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the running back one to me, I still think you could add one, but those other spots, maybe one more lineman, two D tackles, probably not even D lineman, D tackles. Third quarterback, I like if Kwasi Gilmer ends up coming to Nebraska, I like his potential. I mean, he's productive on the level of Corey Barney in the Big Ten so far. Like he's putting up similar numbers to that. So I think
Different
that
player.
different kind of player, but the
Yeah.
production's similar. And
He needs to
yeah.
be a Dane Key, only better.
Right. He does.
Yeah.
And hey, that's one spot Nebraska's gotten right in the portal almost every year, it seems
Yeah,
like.
that's
Or at least
fair.
a lot of the years. That's
No,
been a priority. And
I'm not quibbling too much. I mean, they've gotten it right quite a few times. So
they're looking for a long snapper. That's the other thing. You know, that was a hot topic 2 years ago, and this last year Kevin Gallick did a good job, and I guess there's still a possibility that he could come back for one more year based on a ruling that he's
sure.
a part of. So they're kind of looking at guys there. So yeah, there's another guy, another sort of thing to consider, but it's a heck of a start, you know, and you have, I think, until January 20th to enroll in classes at UNL. So the portal window closes on the 16th, but really the deadline for acquiring guys is a few days after that. And we'll see maybe who sneaks in late, but it's a heck of a foundation that they laid.
About 20 minutes before Kenny Minchie officially flipped to Kentucky, Nebraska men's basketball won again over Ohio State and moved their record to 15-0. We have never seen this in our lifetimes. We've never seen a team that could do this at Nebraska. And I'm just curious, like, what you're as you're watching him, like, what the viscera is. What is the visceral reaction to watching Nebraska make plays every game to win? Not blow it. They make the plays.
Well, I mean, you mentioned we haven't seen it in our lifetime. People that watch Nebraska basketball are conditioned to expect either not much to begin with or for the other shoe to drop at some point early in the season when conference play hits, maybe before that. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm watching the Ohio State game this week and it's just they have that Nebraska has the big lead and then Ohio State comes back. And the part of you that's watched Nebraska basketball forever says, okay, well, this is where Ohio State asserts itself and hits some shots, and Nebraska goes gently into that good night. And it's not what happened. Nebraska hit some threes and they made some defensive plays and they show that fortitude on the road and pull it out late. Like it was incredibly impressive. It's so different than what we've seen. And every game they play is like a heat check in a game where they jack up another three and you're like, ah, is this one going to go in? Are they going to do it against Michigan State? Are they going to do it at Ohio State? And they keep doing it. And I think some of the reasons that they're doing it are qualities that have always been important in basketball, but I think are even more so now. Like having an older team has always been important. I think it's harder to do in this era, keeping some guys together. And I know they've added some pieces, but a lot of that group has been together. And then just guys who like are cool with their roles and aren't just cool with it, but like embrace what they do. Sam Hoiberg embraces, he's not worried about his numbers for his professional stock or, Cale Jacobson isn't worried about his tape so he can go on the portal next year, I don't think. Like these guys, to me, it's the defensive effort that's really impressive game in and game out. The way they close out on shooters outside the 3-point line, the way that they rotate over on slashers to the hoop. It's a team that has an identity that knows what it wants to do, and now it's got a taste. It found that taste in Vegas last year, and it's just got that momentum and that taste. It's a really fun team to watch, and I don't know that they're going to end up being a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament the way that you're seeing on some lines right now, but a 4 seed or a 5 seed, why not? Like it's to me, that's very much in play. It's every game that they play, they continue to refute this idea that they're going to fade down the stretch. It's pretty remarkable. What do you think?
At Indiana, Washington, at Minnesota, I'm sorry, at Northwestern, Oregon, Minnesota. Which of those games is Nebraska most likely to lose?
I mean, the game at Indiana to me stands out. Their tradition, their fan base. It's going to be a weird, bizarro moment in time when Indiana football's in the CFP Final Four and Nebraska basketball's undefeated and in the top 10. I mean, who would have ever thought? But that's, I guess, the one that kind of comes out maybe where brand name or tradition could crop up a little bit or another road game. Maybe Nebraska feels that a little bit. But all those games that you mentioned, I don't believe any of them are ranked at this point. So like this is like an opportunity to really double down on what you're doing, continue to build that momentum. Indiana always has athletes. And so I wonder if that's maybe the thing eventually that gets Nebraska is a really athletic team that kind of figures itself out mid-season. And I'm not super up on like how many other guys are new, but it
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
strikes me as the kind of team where like they've got a lot of talent and maybe it takes them a couple months to figure it out. Maybe they're starting to do that. That would be the one. Minnesota's always been tough for Nebraska too, traditionally, but they're starting to buck some of those trends. So, we'll see. But Indiana's kind of the one that sticks out to me in the near future. You?
Nebraska's playing Minnesota in the barn. And the Gophers beat ranked Iowa last night and ranked Indiana. Indiana's not ranked anymore, but beat those guys. Indiana's an old team. They're very seasoned. They're very old. They have five seniors. They will be tough for Nebraska to beat. But let's just say, for argument's sake, Nebraska wins the game. They're going to be 20-0 playing Michigan.
Remarkable.
Remarkable. On what network is the game on? Because, I mean, they didn't schedule Nebraska to play any games on like major TV. So let me take a look here. I have to look.
That's a great question.
So if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to go all the way to the end of the season here. Yeah. I think Nebraska's on national TV, like what you would call over-the-air TV on Fox when they play Iowa at the end of the year. The game at Michigan is on Peacock.
Of course. So does it
Big,
actually
biggest,
count?
like maybe the biggest Big Ten game of the year, the biggest game Nebraska's been in years against like number one or number two Michigan. That'll be on Peacock. Anyway, Nebraska has a chance to be 20-0. I mean, it's just something. It's very cool to watch. I think you need it all with the defense. Nebraska's defense has been really good. It's almost like it functions like a zone, the way that it
Yes.
runs, and it's been very effective. And they've done a nice job against good Big Ten teams up to this point. Obviously, rebounding is a little bit of a weakness, and so when they play teams that can rebound, they're going to have a little bit of problems. They're going to have a little bit of stickiness and trouble. But they do a lot of things well, and they overcame a night from Price Sanford. It might have been a little flat at Ohio State, just a little. I mean, that thing was a missile at the rim, and he made one late, which helped. But he didn't quite have his usual loft on the shots, I think, because they were playing so quickly after they had played Michigan State. So I think he'll be in better shape for Saturday's game. And one of the great things about Sanford is that he has played in all of these gyms before. So, he and Mass are the two teams' sort of, best players, whatever phrase you want to use. Oftentimes, when you add a transfer, they're learning all this stuff as they go. Sanford knows all of this. Now, he knows what it's like to shoot in Assembly Hall, and he knows what it's like to go to the barn, and he knows what it's like to play some of these teams and face some of these coaches. So now he takes his knowledge and he fuses that with Fred Hoiberg's tweaks of Sanford's game, and also Fred Hoiberg's perspective on playing all those guys. And you just have this like super transfer. Like Bennett Sturts is a really good player at Iowa. Don't get me wrong. He is. And he's excellent. But he's going through the Big Ten for the first time, and his coach is too. Whereas Sanford is going through it for the third time, and his coach is going through it for like the seventh time. Advantage Sanford, in my opinion. And Sturts is a great player. And they play different positions, don't get me wrong. But the point is that those are two of the higher profile transfers in the league. And I think one of the reasons Samford's game has gone to the next level is because he knows these teams, and so does Fred. And so he knows how to get Samford open. And, if Samford hits a couple of those threes midway through the second half against Ohio State, I don't think it comes down to the end and Frager having to do what Frager did. But if Samford's hitting shots, they're hard to beat. They're very hard, because once he hits one or two, then he can hit seven. And then the way Casey used to be, Casey'd hit a couple, and then Casey'd start rolling to the hoop. Well, Samford does the same thing. They use Samford in some of the same ways that they used to use Casey, where it's like, okay, now you're worried about the range, and now you're gonna overplay that, and we're gonna roll him to the hoop, and he's gonna get layups there. So Nebraska's offense is just so intricate and so thoughtful in the way that if you can establish that perimeter shot, then they're going to get to the rim. And then Sam Hoiberg, like you said, he doesn't care about, you're right, he doesn't care about his individual stats. What I do appreciate about Sam is he understands when to go to the rim, and it isn't never. You know, like he knows when. Like at this point in his career, if he sees a situation where he can attack the rim and go get a basket, he attacks the rim and he go gets the basket. It's not, well, I'm only 6 foot and I was a walk-on and this guy's really tall. No, he goes for it. And he trusts that he might be able to finish, and if he doesn't finish, somebody else will get the rebound. That's what's crucial about him and Lawrence. Lawrence does the same thing. They know when to go get a basket. And I think that's an area where Hoiberg's confidence has grown. And it's important. Like, he's not a great 3-point shooter. I think if I were to look up Sam's 3-point line, I don't think it's elite. He's pretty good, but he's certainly not a Sanford level shooter, but he has become super aggressive at, going to the rim. Let's see, what is he this year? He's pretty good this year. He's 36% this year. Now, he's not a volume 3-point shooter. He only takes two a game, but he's not bad. But you know what this dude is? He is 61% inside the arc. Sam Hojbjerg.
I'll play for a guy that size. Yeah.
That's a guy that knows when to go get the basket, and he's able to do it. So it's not like he's like, well, he's such an incredible shooter that people are overplaying him. He just has a sixth sense on when to attack the basket. And that's part of what makes this team special, is they're old and they're instinctive and they know when to go make a play. And in all of the ways that Fred Hoiberg could ever imagine a team being, this is what it is. I actually don't know that he would say that this team is more talented than some of his best Iowa State teams, because I don't think it is. He had some teams at Iowa State that are pretty darn talented, but this team has got to be way up at the top of, like, they know how to play basketball.
And I would just add the depth too. Like the other trademark about watching Nebraska basketball for years was the inevitable scoring droughts that were going to crop up. And there really haven't been a ton of those this year.
Oh, yeah.
And you
Yes.
think
Very
about,
few.
last year it was Bryce Williams was the guy, and it's been Bryce McGowan's, who's been the guy, and they've Trey Palmer, some of these different guys. This year it could come from a lot of places. I mean, we've seen the Rink Mast game and the Price Sanford game and the Braden Frager moments and Sam Hoiberg. Like, I think that's one of the most fun parts about this team is you just don't know where the offense is going to come from on a given play, on a given night, and like in a good way. Like it could come from a lot of different places. So I think that's the other part. If you're an opposing team trying to game plan, like there's a lot of ways that Nebraska can beat you and a lot of ways that they can adjust in game. I think they've shown the ability to do that. A lot of fun to watch. It's going to be really interesting to see how high this thing can go.
Go high. Okay, that's our Pick Six podcast for this week. We'll be back next week to finish, well, maybe not quite finish up the transfer portal, but go over some of the guys that are in the portal or coming out of the portal still. We'll have a little recap of the All-American Bowl, which is on Saturday. It includes multiple Husker signees and guys that they might land for next year, because they have like sort of a junior workout thing that they do too, that isn't part of a game. And then we'll talk more Husker hoops. And by the time we talk again, I believe Nebraska will have played two times against Indiana, and then that 8 o'clock game against the Washington Huskies. For Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six podcast.
This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. You've sent so many emails to your tax pro and nothing. It feels like you're chasing updates, but now your taxes are done for you by a TurboTax expert. So you actually know what's happening. You can match with an expert and just hand off all your tax stuff to them right in the app. So instead of guessing, you can feel confident your TurboTax expert's on it. Now this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Visit TurboTax.com to learn more. Only available with TurboTax experts. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app.